From the Alaska Public Radio Network and KSK Anchorage, this is live coverage of the National Transportation Safety Board hearings into the marine accident involving the Exxon Valdez. I'm Bruce Melzer. Our next witness that we're going to be hearing for is Captain William E. Murphy. He was the pilot on board the Exxon Valdez the night that the tanker ran into the Bligh Reef. And we'll go to his testimony now.
Yeah. Please state your full name.
William Edward Murphy.
And by whom are you employed?
I'm self-employed.
And are you a member of an association?
Yes, I am.
Could you please identify?
Southwest Alaska Pilots Association.
Do you have any certificates or licenses that will attest to your qualification?
Yes, sir, I do.
All right, sir. Mr. Woody?
Good afternoon, Cap Murphy. How do you hear me?
I hear you fine, thank you.
Cap Murphy, what is the name of the pilot association that pilots vessels in and out of Port Valdez, those vessels engaged in the tank vessels in the TAPS trade?
The Southwest Alaska Pilots Association.
Are you a member of that association?
Yes, sir, I am.
And do you have an office? Are you an officer of that association?
I am the president of that association.
Would you explain briefly then what the association consists of and what your position entails?
The association is composed of 16 full-time and 4 training pilots. Pilots are self-employed independent contractors who group together in the fashion of Allstate Pilots Association to provide a dispatching service to enable them to speak with one voice and conduct a piloting business.
Could you explain briefly about piloting into Port Valdez, how that's accomplished?
Normally, excuse me, vessels send their ETA, their estimated times of arrival, periodically by message to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Terminal. Some of the companies send it directly to our office. Others, through their agents, by one of those means, we learn of the estimated arrival time of the vessel. So we're expecting it. Under normal circumstances, prior to the accident, the vessel would arrive at the pilot station off of Rocky Point. At that time, the pilot boat would leave our mooring at Rocky Point, take the pilot to the vessel where the pilot would embark, and then conduct the vessel into the berths at Alyeska.
And do your pilots dock the ships?
Yes, sir, they do.
How many pilots do you have on station in Valdez?
We keep 4 on station at all times.
And how are your pilots selected to take a piloting job?
At Valdez?
Yes.
By a normal rotation. Normally the pilot who has just finished a job will go to the bottom of the list. When his turn comes up again, he will have that particular job.
Are you in any way associated with any kind of a state pilotage commission?
Am I?
Yes.
Yes, I'm a member of the Alaska Board of Marine Pilots.
And what does that position entail?
There are 7 members on the Alaska Board of Marine Pilots. The Board of Marine Pilots is responsible for maintaining a group of qualified pilots, licensing them, disciplining them when necessary, and so forth.
Has the State Commission issued any recent rulings or policy changes since the grounding of Exxon Valdez?
Yes, they have.
Would you explain what those are?
By emergency regulation at a pilot board meeting in mid-April, I believe, April 16th or near that time, an emergency regulation was issued to move what was then the pilot station 2.3 miles north of Busby Island Light to a position west-southwest of Bligh Reef Buoy. The station was moved some 12 miles from its old location to the new location, approximately 12 miles.
Is that the same pilot station then that used to pick up non-pilot vessels?
No, sir, it's somewhat south.
It's somewhat further south.
Yes, it is.
Can you give us a very brief history or description of how it is that state pilots bring tank vessels, domestic tank vessels, into Port Valdez? The background of it?
Yes, I can. Prior to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline system going on stream, the plan was that the oil companies would employ their masters to bring the ships from sea clear into the Port of Valdez to a position off the docks. At that point, tugboat masters, mooring masters, if you will, docking masters, would come aboard and perform the docking. That was seen by my associates and me and all state pilots as not a good thing. We went to the legislature, this was in early 1977, described the situation, appealed to the legislature. The legislature enacted a law that required the employment of state pilots aboard tank vessels in the mandatory pilotage of waters of Alaska on tank vessels of over 50,000 gross tons.
Was there any kind of an agreement, any part of the TAPS agreement that also spoke to pilotage that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. All the vessels comply with applicable pilotage regulations.
Can you describe the track line that vessels follow in entering Port Valdez?
From the pilot station?
Right, please.
Normally, the pilots embark the vessels at or near the pilot station, which was 2.3 miles north of Busby Island Light. They then steer to make good a course of 0.34 degrees true, past 0.9 miles off of Rocky Point. Steer that course until the vessel is abeam of a small unnamed island, which we have nicknamed No Name Island. At that, when we're abeam at that point, the vessel is then steered a course of 0.28 degrees true, heading on Middle Rock. When the vessel is nearly abeam of entrance point light, course is changed to make good a course of 0.45. Until the vessel is abeam of Entrance Island, or slightly past Entrance Island, depending upon the vessel, the circumstances, and the pilot, at which time it's turned toward the berths, generally on a course of 0.85 or 0.90 degrees true.
Now, this particular track line that goes through Valdez Narrows, does it have a name? Is that the optimum track line?
I think it's been called that by the Coast Guard, yes.
Is that line established by any kind of an agreement, or is it codified? Can you explain the background of why there's a track line?
My experience was in the pipeline, when ships first started coming, the Coast Guard vessel traffic system commanding officer had it in his mind that the vessels should be on a particular track line. We pilots who were actually doing the work disagreed in rather strong terms, and we persuaded him to see our point of view. And by agreement between the pilots and the commanding officer of the vessel traffic system at that time, the optimum track line was established. That's my understanding.
About what year might that have occurred?
That would have been in 1977.
Now, If a pilot does not keep his vessel close to that track line, are there any consequences or corrective actions that are taken?
Yes, particularly in the early days of the pipeline, the radar operators at the vessel traffic system would speak to the ship on the radio and to tell them that according to his plot in the traffic room, the vessel was so many yards off the optimum track. That does not seem to be customary in recent years, probably because I'd like to think the pilots usually have the vessels on the optimum track.
In the past, have there ever been any correspondence between the Coast Guard and the Pilot Association regarding not staying on the track that you're aware of?
Not that I am personally aware of.
But in recent years, how many years could you characterize that there have been no problems with people maintaining the track without getting advice from the vessel traffic service?
I can only speak from my personal experience. I'm of course not in Valdez 12 months of the year. It's been quite some time since I've heard such a transmission, a number of years. I, of course, don't know what goes on when I'm not there listening to the radio.
Would you characterize this number of years as 3 or 5 or 10? What I'm referring to is, my understanding is that when a pilot has in the past, sometime in the past, gotten off the track, that it has resulted in correspondence from the captain of the port, the commanding officer of the safety office, to the pilot association. I just wonder if you have any knowledge of such letters.
No, I don't, and I went through our files yesterday to obtain some correspondence for you, and I didn't notice any such letters. There may have been those kinds of letters addressed to the individual pilots. I'm not aware of that.
If you were to receive such a letter, what power would the pilot association have to take any kind of action?
Normally, and this would depend upon who the officers of the association were at that time, they would give a copy of that correspondence to the pilot in question.
But not adhering to the optimum track line would not be an offense as such.
An offense within the pilot association?
A Coast Guard citable offense.
You'd have to direct that question to the Coast Guard.
Captain Murphy, with regard to ICE, has ICE problems in Valley's Arm been increasing in recent years?
I think they have since the pipeline began. Yes, Columbia Glacier seems to have be retreating rather rapidly. There has in recent years been more ice than early in the pipeline days.
What months of the year, I might say, what months does the ice start becoming a problem, and how long does it last into the year?
In my experience, the ice can be a problem any time of the year. I think generally, though, the ice is more of a problem spring through fall, probably spring, summer, and early fall months.
In your experience, have you ever noticed circumstance involving ice that would have kept you from leaving Port Valdez?
That would have kept who from?
Kept you from piloting a vessel out of Port Valdez?
No, sir.
Have you had any experience of bringing vessels through ice? Say, when you piloting a vessel down to the pilot station near Blythe Pool?
Yes, I have.
Could you characterize how many times you brought vessels through there, and whether it was at night or day?
Well, I brought them through there in all conditions of both night and day, probably more than 100 times.
What would you characterize as required to maintain safe navigation if ice persists or is existing in
Valley? I'm sorry, Mr. Woody, I can't hear you.
All right. What would you do, what steps would you take to make sure that the navigation was safe while proceeding through ice in Valley's Arm?
It's hard to generalize. It depends upon the visibility conditions, whether it's night or day, how heavy the ice is, whether there are openings in the ice field, the particular ship in question and its maneuvering characteristics. So it's very hard to generalize. Normally, maneuver the vessel to avoid the ice. Slow it down, perhaps. Ask that a lookout be posted forward, if that's possible.
What would be the maximum speed that would be safe would proceed through ice?
That again, it's impossible to answer that question without you giving a specific instance, because every circumstance is different. I've gone through the ice many times at full ahead. Without any problem at all.
Well, I'm speaking. Let's characterize the situation as occurring at night.
Yes.
A dark night. What would be your speed then to proceed through ice?
Again, I can't generalize about that. It depends upon the particular ship and the state of the ice at the time.
How low a speed have you had to go in the past?
Generally, you can't go very, very slow, because the loaded ship is not responsive at low speed, and it would be difficult to maneuver around the ice at very low speed. So probably not less than 5 or 6 knots, somewhere in that ballpark.
Have you personally ever been delayed in port because of ice when you were piloting a ship?
Not that I can recall.
Would it be advisable or feasible to have a rule that where ice exists during the ice season, that transits are made during daytime?
You're asking me for an opinion.
Yes, I am.
And so I'll give you one. In Alaska, no. During the winter months, as you're aware, there isn't much daylight.
Is there much ice in wintertime?
Usually not as much.
Does ice give a good radar return?
Yes and no. Some ice gives a, generally speaking, the large pieces of ice make a very good radar return. There are, however, some pieces of ice that have been rounded due to melting, perhaps, or just their shape, that do not give a particularly good radar return. It depends upon the atmospheric conditions and the sea state at the time and the performance of the radar in question.
Would you comment on the feasibility also of moving? Would you comment also on the feasibility of permanently moving the pilot station in accordance with the emergency regulation to a point south of Lively Pool?
What is it you would like to know about that?
How feasible is it to do this on a permanent basis? My question is, how feasible is it to do this on a permanent basis to relocate the pilot station south of Lively Pool permanently?
Well, it's feasible. It's quite a lot rougher down there. It's in the area of ice. We pilots are in the process now of planning to completely re-equip and spend some $4 million to do it in order to allow us to safely board and disembark vessels in that area because it is rougher, because we feel we have to have ice-strengthened pilot boats to take a hit in the ice during dark nights, perhaps. So we think it's inevitable that will happen. So it's not something that we like a lot, but we understand the situation and so we're willing to do that.
But you have to move your pilot station.
Yes, we will. We'll have to move our mooring, we think, quite a ways to the south.
Will it require more pilots on station?
We're trying to plan for that now. We think it may this winter, yes.
Are there any other items regarding ice? A navigation through ice that I haven't mentioned that you think might be of interest to us?
No, sir, I can't think of any right now.
Are there any other navigation problems in Valdez Arm?
Well, the published dangers, of course. More often than not during winter months, it's quite windy there.
All right, are you aware of any? Are you hearing me all right?
I can hear you, but not well.
Are there any currents of any consequence in Valdez Arm?
Sometimes there is observable current. However, it's weak and variable and, in my experience, impossible to predict. And it's rarely significant.
Are you aware of any needs for improvement in navigation aids in Valdez Arm?
I would have said prior to the accident, no. Since that time, I and my associates have made some recommendations for navigation aids of increased capability.
Could you enumerate a few examples?
Yes, we've suggested perhaps a lighthouse structure, something with a more powerful light in the area of Bly Reef. That has been our primary suggestion as far as aids to navigation.
Does Bly Reef buoy make a good radar contact?
It does. If atmospheric conditions are right, if there's a low sea state, and if there's not much ice around it, and if the radar, particular radar, is peaked up, again, this is one of those questions where it's impossible to generalize, but if those conditions exist, it makes a pretty good radar target.
Under what conditions might you be unable to pick up light buoy?
Perhaps if the radar you were using wasn't operating at its optimum performance, if there were a high sea state, which is very common during winter months, if it were raining or snowing, if there were a lot of ice in the vicinity of the Bly Reef buoy, or any combination of those things.
Going now to the vessel, have you handled other vessels that are similar in size to the Exxon Valdez?
Yes, sir, I have.
How would you characterize, how often have you maneuvered the Exxon Valdez or its sister ship, the Exxon Long Beach?
Both ships are relatively new to the, are new vessels and new to the trade, probably a cumulative total of 8 times, perhaps.
Okay. Do they pose any particular maneuvering problems to a pilot?
No, sir, they don't. They're very fine handling ships.
I'd like to ask you a hypothetical question regarding the handling of the Exxon Valdez or this class of vessel. If it were proceeding at about 12 knots and you were to apply right 10 degrees rudder, what would you expect to occur? How many degrees and how many seconds, if you could characterize your answer?
Well, that's, pilots don't think in those terms, but I would say the vessel's head would turn probably about 10 degrees in that period of time.
Captain Murphy, there's a chart behind you, 16708 on the easel. We'll bring it down and have you refer to the area around Bly Reef in just a moment.
You're listening to coverage, live coverage of the NTSB hearing into the wreck of the Exxon Valdez. Speaking is Captain William E. Murphy, the pilot who piloted the Exxon Valdez on the 23rd.
Anything in the soundings that would cause any significant change in the way the Exxon Valdez would respond to the rudder?
Would you restate your question?
Yes, of course. There's different depths there as the ship would proceed down, say, from Busby Island down toward the... say take a point approximately 1 mile west of Busby Island Light, mm-hmm. and proceed south on that line to the vicinity of Bly Reef Buoy. Do you see anything along a course line like that that you could anticipate that would change the handling characteristics of the Exxon Valdez?
Well, yes, I can. In the vicinity of Bly Reef, the bottom gradually rises from off of Busby Island 122 fathom to 6 fathoms, and when the vessel arrives at a point, I would say less than 15 fathoms or so. Normally, vessels are said to smell the bottom in shallow water. They don't handle as well as they do in deep water. Turning rate is slower, their turning circle is larger.
But do you see anything in particular that would cause you to suspect that the vessel would not turn at 10 degrees?
I see nothing in particular. No, sir, not until the vessel would arrive at the vicinity of Bly Reef.
All right, thank you. Were you the pilot of the Exxon Valdez on its inbound transit?
Yes, sir, I was.
Would you describe what time you got aboard the vessel and the events of the transit into the pier?
I'll have to refer to my notes.
Certainly.
So I boarded the Exxon Valdez, this is Wednesday the 22nd of March, at 2014 hours at the pilot station.
at 22:45 hours, we had first line port side to Alyeska berth number 5. At 23:30, I rang finish with engines, and at 23:40, I debarked the vessel.
Do you recall?
Mr. William Woody of the National Transportation Safety Board investigative team is questioning William Murphy, the pilot who piloted the Exxon Valdez out of Valdez, Port Valdez, and up to Rocky Point on the night when it later ran aground. He's now talking to him about, in a very methodical way, explaining the procedures that are used in coming into Port Valdez.
Would you be more specific?
Yes. How was the master? How did the master appear to be at that time? How could you characterize his performance, his alertness?
He seemed normal in all respects.
Are you acquainted with the master?
Yes, I am.
Over how many years have you known the captain, known the master?
This is. Is estimating now probably 8 years, 7 or 8 years.
Did you also pilot the vessel outbound that
yes,
night?
Yes, I did.
And about what time did you arrive on the vessel?
I'm referring to my notes again, this is Thursday, the 23rd of March. I boarded the vessel at 20 hours at berth 5.
Would you recount any of the events that you can recall after boarding the vessel at that time?
I boarded the vessel at 20:20. On my way to the wheelhouse, I stopped at the master's cabin, as I ordinarily do, and knocked on the door to let him know that I was there. There was no answer to my knock. He was either wasn't in his room or he was asleep, I presumed. He was not in his cabin. I proceeded to the wheelhouse and made my pre-departure checks and listened to the weather, and I think had a cup of coffee.
All right. Had you heard any reports of ice that evening?
Yes, sir, I had.
And when was the first time you heard any indication of ice in Valdez Arm?
I think it was probably about an hour before I left my quarters to go to the Exxon Valdez. I heard the Arco Juno, which was the ship, the outbound ship immediately preceding the Valdez. I heard the master of the Arco Juno call Valdez traffic and report ice across the lanes, and that he was departing from the southbound lane to maneuver around the ice.
I see. Did you get a subsequent report of ice conditions from the vessel traffic center?
Yes, sir, I did. During the singling up process, Captain Hazelwood asked me to check with the Coast Guard about the ice. At that time, I reported to him the ice report the Arco Juno had made. It was the only vessel, it was the last vessel to make any kind of an ice report, and I told him about it. He seemed satisfied. Then again, after we left the dock, just to confirm that previous ice report, I called Valdez traffic and asked them again for an ice report. They again gave me the ice report on the Arco Juno.
So in other words, the information was solely based on what the Arco Juno had observed and reported about what time?
Yes, sir.
You said you heard it in your quarters. About what time would that have been? You said an hour before?
Well, if I boarded the vessel at 20, it would have been probably, this is an estimate now, probably around 1900, somewhere in that ballpark, yes.
You mentioned something about pre-departure checks. Could you explain what those are?
I think every pilot probably has his own. Normally, I ask the mate on watch what the drafts are. I check the gyro compass against the known dock heading. I check both radars. I check to make sure that the VHF radios are tuned into the appropriate frequencies. I generally call the tugboats and advise them of the departure time and how I propose to make them up.
Now, when you didn't receive a knock at the captain's cabin, you went onto the bridge, as I understand it.
Yes, sir.
And who was on the bridge at this time?
The third mate was on the bridge.
Was anyone else on the bridge?
Not that I can recall.
Do you recall anyone else coming onto the bridge before the return of the captain?
Yes, I do.
And who might that have been?
Pardon me.
Yes, Pat Caples, the agent on duty for Alaska Maritime Agencies, came to the bridge.
And what was her purpose coming on the ship, if you're aware of it?
Yes, it's her purpose was to do what the agents generally do just prior to departure. They come aboard the vessel to obtain a certain information on the cargo and so on for their records and their purposes.
Were you aware of the time that the master arrived back on board?
I didn't know that the master was not on the vessel. I think the agent and I were chatting or drinking coffee or something, and the first indication I had that the master wasn't on board,
Were you aware of the time that the master arrived back on board?
I didn't know that the master was not on the vessel. I think the agent and I were chatting or drinking coffee or something, the first indication I had that the master wasn't on board, I believe the third mate mentioned to the agent that the master had not yet returned. I think that was the...
About what time did she arrive on the bridge?
I guess about 20:30, not long after I'd arrived on the bridge.
Do you recall when the master finally got to the bridge?
I don't recall the time. I did not see him come aboard. I believe, again, it was the third mate who said that the captain's coming aboard now, or words to that effect, and shortly thereafter, the captain came to the wheelhouse.
Were you aware of anything like booms around the ship, or were the tugs alongside, any of these events?
You know, I really can't recall. I've piloted probably 20 or 25 ships since that time. If the tugs weren't alongside, they were en route or ready to come alongside as soon as the boom had been taken from around the vessel.
Do you have any recollection that there was a boom around the vessel?
Yes, I believe the vessel had been boomed.
And the boom was still there when you arrived?
I really can't remember.
Okay. Once the master did appear on the bridge, how long did it take him to transfer to do his business with the agent to give her the information that she was looking for?
I think they greeted each other. The captain and I greeted one another, and very shortly thereafter, the agent went below with the captain, I presume, to his stateroom. Shortly thereafter, she went ashore.
And then how many minutes thereafter, from the time the captain left until he came back, about what time transpired?
Probably, I'm guessing now, more than 5 minutes and less than 10, somewhere in that range.
And who all was on the bridge at this time?
At what time?
I see, at the time the master arrived back on the bridge after providing information for the agent. There had been him, yourself, the mate on a mate. Who else was on the bridge?
The master, myself. I can't recall if the third mate had gone below to let go at that time, and the chief mate. I don't recall if the chief mate or the third mate was on, which of those two gentlemen was on the bridge. One of them was. At some point, the quartermaster appeared on the bridge. So it would have been the captain, myself, one of the mates, and the quartermaster.
Do you recall when the quartermaster came to take the wheel?
No, sir, I don't.
Was your quartermaster on the wheel initially when you arrived?
When I arrived in the wheelhouse, no. The only person on the bridge was the third mate.
Did the quartermaster arrive sometime during the line handling operation?
I believe he did.
About what time did they commence handling lines on the vessel?
According to my personal log, we rang standby engine at 20:54. That normally coincides with starting to let go of the lines, the time of standby engine.
Were there any events in getting underway that were unusual?
None that I recall. It was entirely routine.
Do you recall when the third mate, or there was, do you recall any change of mates on the bridge after getting underway?
Yes, I believe that the chief mate was on the bridge during the getting underway process, and the third officer had gone down to supervise, I believe, letting go aft. At some point after we did get underway, the third mate returned to the bridge and the chief mate went below.
Okay. At some time, after getting underway, did the master leave the bridge and go below?
Yes, he did.
Do you recall approximately how long after getting underway this occurred?
I think probably, this is approximate, probably about 20 minutes after getting underway.
Do you recall whether this was before or after the mates relieved each other?
This was after the mates relieved
after
each other.
After the mates relieved
yes.
each other.
I am not sure if it was the chief mate who was on the bridge during the getting underway process or the second mate, but there was a change of mates.
Okay.
I don't remember which one was in fact there.
When did the master return to the bridge?
About 15 minutes prior to the time I was to disembark the vessel, I asked the third mate to telephone the master and tell him I would be getting off in 15 minutes. The third mate did that, and the master came to the bridge shortly thereafter.
And about where was the vessel when this phone call to the master was made?
The vessel was approaching Rocky Point.
It had passed through Valdez Narrows.
Yes, sir. That's right. Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, going back to the time that the master left the bridge, did he indicate to you or anyone the purpose of leaving the bridge?
He did not indicate to me. I don't know what he indicated to others. I didn't overhear any such conversation.
What is it, the usual practice that you observed on vessels with regard to masters staying on the bridge? Do they sometimes leave for short periods, or are they always there, or do they leave for long periods? Can you characterize what you observed on ships coming in out of Valdez?
Normally the masters, I think in any critical navigation area, the masters are almost always on the bridge. They do frequently leave the wheelhouse for short periods of time. But generally, they're back in the wheelhouse soon.
Right. Now, going particularly to the area of Valdez Narrows, how would you characterize the presence of masters on the bridge in that particular area?
Well, that would be common. The master would be in the wheelhouse during that time.
Would this be a time when he might leave the bridge for a short period of time?
That sometimes happens. Normally, captains are on the bridge transiting Valdez Narrows.
About what time did you depart from the vessel?
According to my notes again, I departed at 23:20.
23:20?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And where was the vessel at that time?
The vessel was I believe, abeam Rocky Point or slightly south of that position.
And about what course and speed was the vessel proceeding on at that time?
We were steering 219 degrees true and gyro, and I, as recollection serves me, the engines were slow ahead.
Would you describe the events of your departure from the vessel? Who escorted you down, and how many people were in attendance at the pilot ladder, and anything that you recall about your departure?
Yes, the officer on watch escorted me down to the ladder. There was a seaman. I can't recall if there were one or two seamen, but there was at least one seaman waiting in the area of the pilot ladder. When I arrived at the pilot ladder, the pilot boat either was alongside or arrived very shortly thereafter. I climbed on the ladder, got on the pilot boat, and left.
Did you were you able to observe the vessel thereafter after arriving on the pilot boat?
Not for very long. It's quite a short run into our mooring, which is in a cove up behind Rocky Point, surrounded by hills. So I could only observe the vessel for perhaps 5 or 10 minutes.
Did you observe the vessel to make any course changes during this time?
I made no such observation.
Do you have any knowledge of vessels departing the vessel traffic system, vessel traffic scheme, to within, say, a mile of Busby Island Light? Based on your own experience and knowledge?
Based upon my own experience, no. Of course, what the vessel does to maneuver through the ice before it embarks the pilot and after it disembarks the pilot, I really can't say, but I have not personally had that experience.
Just reframe my notes for just for a moment. Captain Murphy, are you under the impression, one way or the other, whether vessels are tracked or not in Valdez Arm by the vessel traffic system?
My impression is that they are. My understanding is that they are tracked.
And to what point in Valdez Arm are they tracked, say, going outbound?
My understanding is to the area of Bly Reef Buoy.
If you were aware of severe ice conditions, a hypothetical question now, if you were aware of severe ice conditions, that would necessitate you going outside the traffic separation scheme. How close to Busby Island Light do you believe you could come?
I believe that I would personally be uncomfortable if I were inside a mile off of Busby Island Light. I wouldn't like it.
Are there any unknowns about the bottom in the vicinity? Is the bottom pretty well surveyed?
Well, I believe it's pretty well surveyed. There is a caution on all of the Prince William Sound charts as a result of the 1964 earthquake that there's the bottom has either subsided or risen in areas of Prince William Sound, some of which haven't been resurveyed. However, I believe that the charts of Valdez Port and Arm, I believe the surveys are generally accurate.
You know of no anomalies that are not on the chart in the area of Bly Reef Buoy?
None that I'm aware of.
Or I should say in the area between Busby Island Light and Bly Reef?
No, sir, I'm aware of none.
Do you have any personal...